The Israeli genocide in Gaza claims more civilian lives as the death toll tops 31,000, mostly women and children. As Muslims mark the start of the holy month of Ramadan, Israel continues its campaign of starvation against Palestinians in Gaza by refusing to allow much-needed aid into the Strip. And the IOF forces imposed restrictions on the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound and beat Palestinian worshippers outside of the holy site. Hello and welcome live from Tehran. You've tuned into World News. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Welcome to the program. Well, Israel continues its genocide of Palestinians in Gaza, killing more civilians in fresh strikes across the besieged territory. One of the latest attacks hit a residential building in a Gaza neighborhood, killing 16 civilians. Now, the Gaza Health Ministry said Monday that the death toll from over 5 months of Israeli genocide in Gaza has risen to over 31,100 people. More than 72,000 others have been injured. Now, the regime has also razed most of civilian and other structures in Gaza. According to Gaza's government, 220 mosques have been destroyed in the coastal territory since October the 7th. Well, Palestinians in the Gaza Strip are suffering from worsening malnutrition and dehydration as Israel continues with its genocidal war and blockade of the Strip. Meanwhile, the people in Gaza have begun observing the fasting month of Ramadan. We've discussed that with our guests in our news review program.
It's time now for the news review of this bulletin. Muslims around the world are marking the fasting month of Ramadan against the backdrop of the U.S.-Israeli genocide in the besieged Gaza Strip. Iran, Morocco, Libya, Oman, and Jordan have announced a Tuesday start for the holy month. Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, Qatar, Egypt, Algeria, and Tunisia have already announced Monday as the beginning of Ramadan. People across the Palestinian territories, including in Gaza and the occupied West Bank, also began their fasting on Monday. This is amid malnutrition and dehydration in the Gaza Strip, including in the southern city of Rafah, where some 1.5 million people are taking shelter from Israeli airstrikes. Many international organizations have warned of a looming catastrophe if Israel does not allow humanitarian aid to enter the blockaded territory. Mutiaba Musaba is a correspondent joining us from Deir al-Bala. We also have Jafar Ramini, who's a Palestinian writer and political analyst, joining us from Fremantle in Australia. Welcome to you both. Mutiaba Musaba, let me start with you. So we know it's the month of Ramadan, and I'm wondering how Palestinians there are coping with this, given the fact that they're still being attacked from every which way. And, of course, many are starving.
Yes, Kaveh. Actually, this Ramadan is unprecedented compared to the precedented months. As you know, that the people of Gaza Strip are welcoming this month with more airstrikes, more bloodshed, and more destruction, as the Israeli occupation forces are still committing more crimes and more massacres against the Palestinian civilians here in the Gaza Strip. Over the last night, the Israeli occupation warplanes destroyed a residential building in Azaytun neighborhood, claiming the lives of at least 16 Palestinian civilians, mostly women and children, and even in Rafah city, the city that houses at least 1.5 million Palestinian civilians. These moments, actually, another residential building was destroyed by the Israeli warplanes, claiming the lives of at least 4 Palestinian civilians. However, on the ground, the Israeli starvation war is still continued against the Palestinian people. Over the last couple of hours, the Gaza's health ministry announced that three Palestinian babies actually passed away and died of hunger and famine as they were suffering from the dehydration and the malnutrition over the lack of the food and the milk and drinkable water. And this number is rising and soaring incrementally as thousands of the Palestinian children are suffering from the same circumstances and the same catastrophic humanitarian conditions. So generally we can say that this Ramadan comes actually while the people here in Gaza are completely afflicted by the continuous Israeli genocide in Gaza. Over to you, Kavi.
Jafar Ramani, it's a really desperate situation, not that it wasn't before. And, you know, the U.S. president did promise that it would have some kind of a truce before Ramadan. But we know that Hamas also has been steadfast in not wanting a temporary one, amongst other diversions that there have been. How do you view what's happening here in terms of the responsibility? We know obviously Israel is the one that's executing it, but it's the U.S. that is the one that's supporting the genocidal onslaught that's happening.
Well, I view it as a total disaster, and I view the Americans as being totally complicit, if not partners, in this genocide and starvation of the Palestinian people. President Biden, in his speech to the nation on Sunday, he was interviewed on television, live on television in America, and he said that the Netanyahu is doing Israeli disservice. No mention of the 30,000+ Palestinians who were killed. He was just worried about the reputation of Israel. And not to miss the point, Mr. Netanyahu immediately on Sunday made an interview with Bild, the German tabloid, and he absolutely refuted what the president said. He said, no, I'm not doing this service to the Israeli, to Israel. All the Israelis agree with me that we must continue this war until we finish Hamas, i.e. until we ethnically cleanse Gaza totally. Another thing, if I may, the United States of America could stop this with a phone call from Mr. Biden to Netanyahu to say stop it. They did it before and they can do it now. But of course, Biden is so much a Zionist. He is more Zionist than Netanyahu himself. If they really want to help the Palestinians and stop this famine and this genocide, they can do one thing and one simple thing. Open the Rafah crossings. According to the United Nations aid program, there are 1,200 trucks waiting to enter Gaza on the Rafah crossings. All what the United States needs to do is to say to Israel, allow the men and pressure Egypt to open the Rafah crossing. They're all conspiring against the Palestinians. And when? In the holy month of Ramadan. Hooray for the Muslim world.
All right, thank you very much for that. We do appreciate it. Jafar Ramini there, a Palestinian writer and political analyst, and also Muti Abu Musaba, a correspondent from Deir al-Balah. With that, we come to an end of our news review.
Now, the military wing of the Palestinian resistance movement, Hamas, has inflicted losses on Israeli forces in its fresh retaliatory attacks in Gaza. The Al-Qassam Brigade said its fighters managed to detonate a building in an undisclosed location in Gaza, killing and injuring a number of Israeli infantry forces. It added that resistance fighters clashed with another group of Israeli troops inside of a tunnel, which caused several casualties among the invaders. The military wing of Hamas also said that an Israeli engineering corps soldier was shot dead in an area near the southern city of Khan Yunis. And in northern Gaza, the Al-Qassam Brigade targeted an Israeli military post using a drone. Another Israeli soldier was also targeted by resistance snipers in Gaza City. Palestinian resistance fighters have been putting a stiff resistance to Israeli soldiers since the start of the regime's ground invasion of Gaza. The Israeli regime has imposed tight restrictions on the Al-Aqsa Mosque, blocking access of hundreds of Muslims to the holy site. According to eyewitnesses, the occupying forces detained worshippers at the mosque gates and engaged in clashes with them. Israeli Defense Minister Yoav Gallant said in a video address that Tel Aviv respects the freedom of worship at the Al-Aqsa complex and all holy places. Contradicting his claim, social media videos showed Israeli forces blocking Muslims from entering the mosque and using batons against them. The regime's actions prompted reactions from Muslim nations. Jordanian Foreign Minister Ayman Safadi stated the restrictions imposed by Israel on access to the Al-Aqsa Mosque during Ramadan could push the situation toward an explosion. At least 25 Palestinians have been detained in the past day as Israeli forces carried out new incursions into various towns and neighborhoods across the occupied West Bank. Meanwhile, tensions are soaring across Lebanon's southern border amid Israel's onslaught against Gaza. Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah says it has carried out a series of retaliatory operations against Israeli targets north of the occupied territories. We're earlier joined by our correspondent, Mariam Saleh, who brought us more in the story.
We know that Hezbollah has launched several operations, but the most significant one is the one that you mentioned, of course, against the barracks of Keilah, and that is an area which is considered very strategic for the Israelis. Also, this is, of course, very qualitative, especially with the fact that Hezbollah decided to use four drones, kamikaze-style drones, and this means that this target is very important. They say that they hit their target very precisely, and that is what they call the command center, which they targeted is the command center for the air defense system and the rocket defense areas of the Israelis. We have been hearing from the Israelis lately that Hezbollah has focused on basically targeting the defense systems of the Israelis. And this, although has not stopped the Israelis' activities when it comes to their air activities and their drones flying over Lebanese skies, however, it will be on the long run very detrimental for the Israeli defenses in any type of confrontation that they will have to face with Hezbollah. They are basically getting weakened. The Hezbollah also launched with their mortars and their guided missiles and perhaps even anti-tank missiles, the Jalal al-Alam post, which is also one of the posts that is usually targeted. It's on the eastern side it's on the western side of the border. They also launched another attack against Israeli soldiers in Talat al-Tayhat.
Pro-Palestine gathering at the University of Vienna. Students calling for an end to Israel's massacre of civilians in the Gaza Strip.
Free Palestine!
Free, free Palestine!
Free, free Palestine!
End the apartheid!
End the apartheid!
End the occupation!
End the occupation!
End ethnic cleansing!
End ethnic cleansing!
Stop this genocide!
Stop this genocide!
A group of protesters called Students Against Genocide held the gathering inside of the university, waving flags and banners in support of Palestine. They chanted slogans demanding an end to the genocidal war in the Gaza Strip and the occupation of Palestinian lands. The protesters also demanded a meeting with the university chancellor, who they considered as complicit in the Gaza genocide. They cited the cancellations of lectures on the history of Palestine, which have increased since October the 7th, and the funding of an Islamophobic research project by the academy. Now, the students also urge an end to the academic cooperation between the University of Vienna and Israeli academic institutions. The protest was broken up by police, who encircled and held the students for almost an hour. Now, the students were also threatened to be charged and fined for public disorder. Well, a former Palestinian prisoner says Israel is attempting to achieve through negotiations what it has failed to obtain by force and war.
One of the reasons behind the Al-Aqsa flood operation was to capture Israeli soldiers for the purpose of conducting a prisoner swap. As far as I know, and according to media reports, more than 140 Israeli captives are currently held by the resistance in Gaza. The Israeli regime launched an attack and killed Palestinians in order to extract the captives by force. But the resistance has refused to free any captive held in Gaza unless Palestinians held in Israeli jails are freed, particularly elderly people, patients, women, and children. If they want their captives, then we want our detainees in return. Currently, negotiations are underway to reach a prisoner swap deal. Israel, by nature, always eludes. The initial framework for the deal was outlined by Israel in Paris, and we didn't intervene at all. they sent that framework deal to Hamas for consideration. And for its part, Hamas sent it to other Palestinian factions. That proposal only serves the interests of Israel, as the regime wants to take its captives at a low price. The regime apparently believes that they can achieve through negotiations what they failed to take by force and war, and that's impossible. That proposal was rejected, but amendments were made to it. Israel, however, rejected those amendments. We only call for the release of our detainees, for a ceasefire and the withdrawal of the Israeli troops, and for allowing food to enter Gaza. We don't want anything else.
Sheikh Talal Abdurrahman, who has been a prisoner in Israeli jails for 18 years now, made the comments in an exclusive interview with the latest episode of Press TV's Hidden Files. Abdurrahman detailed the hardships Palestinian inmates face in the regime's jails. He also underlined the Israeli regime's escalating crackdown on Palestinians since October the 7th. Iran's foreign ministry has slammed the U.S. airdrops of aid in the Gaza Strip as a ridiculous and bitter stunt. The ministry's spokesman said in his weekly presser that such actions are an attempt to cover up Washington's warmongering policies and mend the U.S.'s image. Nasser Kanani added that it is the U.S. that has been fueling the war by vetoing U.N. Security Council resolutions that called for a ceasefire in Gaza. Now, the spokesman said Washington has maintained its large-scale weapon sales to Israel during the regime's genocide against Palestinians. Kanani blamed the U.S. as the main culprit for the continuation of the onslaught on Gaza. He also called for effective and coherent efforts to stop the Israeli genocide in Gaza on the eve of the fasting month of Ramadan. Iran, Russia, and China are set to kick off joint naval drills in the northern tip of the Indian Ocean. The combined naval exercise, dubbed Maritime Security Belt 2024, will start on Tuesday. Various divisions of the military of the three countries will be participating in the large-scale drills. Iran says the maneuvers are aimed at ensuring security in the region, improving trilateral relations, and global peace. This is the fifth military exercise Iran, Russia, and China are conducting jointly. Observers from Azerbaijan, Kazakhstan, Oman, Pakistan, and South Africa will also be in attendance. And with that, brings us to the end of this World News edition right here. Thanks so much for staying tuned.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Limelight. As the legal jousting by Trump lawyers, prosecutors, and judges has heated up, Trump's team keeps raising election interference claims as they seek to postpone trials until post-election day. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. Former U.S. Justice Department officials say claims by Donald Trump and his lawyers that holding any of the four criminal trials he now faces before the U.S. election in November would be election interference, lack a solid legal basis, and are brazen ploys to delay trials until post-election. As he campaigns to return to the White House, Donald Trump is facing unprecedented legal and political perils. Trials are pending in four federal and state jurisdictions, where he's been charged with 91 felony counts, including 17 about conspiring with allies to overturn his loss to Joe Biden in the 2020 presidential race. To thwart any damaging verdicts and negative trial coverage pre-election, the former U.S. president and his lawyers have pushed legal and political arguments by invoking election interference and presidential immunity, as they've sought to convince judges and courts to postpone trial dates until after next November's election. Department of Justice veterans say Trump's drive to have trials held post-election is premised heavily on hopes of winning the presidency again, and then telling the Department of Justice to kill the federal charges. So far, crying election interference in order to postpone trials until after election hasn't achieved much, but his tenuous claims of absolute immunity for all his actions as president have succeeded in pushing back some key trial dates this year in tactical wins for Donald Trump. Presently, Trump is due to stand trial on 25th of March in New York, where he faces 34 felony counts from Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg, who is charging he falsified business records to conceal payments of hush money in 2016 to movie actress Stormy Daniels. After Alvin Bragg charged him last spring, Donald Trump told a gathering at Mar-a-Lago that the New York case and the three other federal and state cases then under scrutiny by prosecutors amounted to massive election interference at a scale never seen before. Trump, who has claimed he's innocent of all the charges, repeated the specter of election interference again recently on his Truth Social platform, saying, "Prosecutors aimed for the various trials to come up during my campaign." Donald Trump also erroneously claimed that very strict rules and regulations of the Department of Justice bar prosecuting a political opponent or anyone right in the middle of his or her political campaign. But former federal prosecutors say Trump has distorted Department of Justice guidelines to bolster bogus election interference claims. Paul Peltier, the former acting chief of Department of Justice's fraud section, said trial schedules of criminal cases ought to be immune from allegations of election interference by Trump and his lawyers. Once anyone is charged with a crime, the setting of a trial is purely within the purview of the independent judiciary and should be both blind and immune to outside political calendars and machinations by Trump and his lawyers. Other former Department of Justice prosecutors concurred with the idea. Former federal prosecutor Paul Rosenzweig told The Guardian, "There has been a long-standing policy against bringing new federal charges in the run-up to an election, but there has never been a policy against continuing an ongoing case just because a criminal defendant becomes a candidate for office." Paul Rosenzweig added, "If there were such a policy, a charged criminal could avoid trial by the simple expedient of running for office. Still, some trial dates have been delayed for other reasons, including cases that special counsel Jack Smith brought charging Trump with conspiring to overturn Joe Biden's win and for mishandling hundreds of classified documents by taking them to his residence at Mar-a-Lago in Florida after he left the Oval Office. The U.S. Supreme Court recently handed Trump a victory when it agreed to hear his claims of absolute immunity involving the election subversion charges and scheduled oral arguments for late April, setting back a trial once slated from March until probably August or September at the earliest. In one court filing with the High Court, Donald Trump lawyers raised election interference arguments. The special counsel seeks urgently to force President Trump into a months-long criminal trial at the height of campaign season, effectively sidelining him and preventing him from campaigning against the current president. The website Ground News has also covered the same story and tells us more. As the legal jousting by Trump lawyers, prosecutors and judges has heated up, Trump's legal team keeps raising election interference claims as they seek to postpone trials until post-election day. Trump lawyer Todd Blanche argued for holding the classified documents trial post-election at a 1st of March hearing by Florida District Judge Eileen Cannon, who is overseeing Special Prosecutor Smith's case charging Trump with mishandling classified documents. Todd Blanche said at the hearing, "A trial that takes place before the election is a mistake and should not happen. You're talking about taking Trump off the campaign trail for blocks of time for really no reason." Judge Eileen Cannon has not yet set a trial date, but has postponed the original starting time for May, in part due to start this month of the New York hush money trial. Former Department of Justice officials dismissed Trump's election interference arguments as fallacious and dangerous, given the seriousness of the charges and the stakes for U.S. democracy. Former Deputy Attorney General Donald Eyer, who served during the George H.W. Bush years, said, "The idea of prosecutions addressing systematic efforts to overturn legitimate election results are themselves election interference is just ridiculous," adding, "They are the only way that the integrity of our electoral process can be defended." Former justice official and White House lawyer for part of Donald Trump's years, Ty Cobb, said Trump's claims of political persecution and election interference are part and parcel of the same disease, his crippling narcissism. "It's classically hypercritical coming from the unchallengeable king of election interference." Still, Donald Trump and his lawyers have kept up a barrage of election interference claims with an eye to getting trial dates deferred. Trump lawyer Todd Blanche in February invoked election interference in trying to persuade New York Judge Juan Merchan, who is overseeing the hush money trial, to postpone it. Todd Blanche argued that since primary season has begun, it is complete election interference for the trial to proceed under 34-count indictment against Donald Trump. Judge Juan Merchan shot back, "That is not a legal argument." In a similar vein, Trump lawyer Steve Sado argued in an Atlanta court filing last year that putting Trump on trial this August, as Georgia prosecutors requested on 13 counts of conspiring to overturn his 2020 loss in Georgia, would be the most effective election interference in the history of the United States. The trial date for the case, which was brought against Donald Trump and 18 co-defendants by Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis, is now in limbo, in part because Fannie Willis has been charged with a potential conflict of interest by one defendant, which now awaits a ruling from a Georgia judge.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا, or you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now we will listen to the speech of Sheikh Osama Abdul Ghani.
Dear brothers and sisters in Islam, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Tonight's talk is called The Mark of the Mu'min. The Mark of the Mu'min. So brothers and sisters, as you know, what we're doing is going over a book to reteach ourselves Quranic aqa'id, our belief system as taught by Quran, right? So Quran or Islam, unfiltered, raw. What happens is, it's been over 1,000 years of misinformation and propaganda that we're pushing back against. Many Islamic concepts don't seem real to us. Although we love the Quran, we believe in the Quran, we believe in Ahlul Bayt, but real Islam as is, many times for us it'll seem it's a little too extreme. Brothers and sisters, if you can join me with looking at your Qurans at Surah number 8, the verse says this, Fattaqullah. So have taqwa of God. Be wary of Allah. Right? Back to our verse. Fattaqullah wa aslihu dhata baynikum. And reform matters amongst yourselves. Another instruction from God. One of them, we talked about taqwa before, what taqwa actually means. But the other idea is amongst yourselves, not bickering, picking fights, not being forgiving. Aslihu dhata baynikum. So, what does this mean? Brothers and sisters, one of the things that we're not supposed to do is to lose focus on the true enemies of Islam and start turning all of our hatred and our anger to our fellow believers. There are some people who are like this. They'll make a mountain out of a molehill. They can't forgive a mistake. They're ready to go to war. But at the same time, you'll find that this person who is so angry and so worked up and so warlike, and I don't back down from anything and I tell it how it is, you'd be surprised. Sometimes these individuals have nothing to say when it comes to the Yazid of the time. And again, brothers and sisters, when we're going over these ayat of the Quran, the idea is introspection, not finger pointing, not now I leave the session, now I go over and say, myself, better myself. What is Islam? Islam, brothers and sisters, anybody who says shahadatain is a Muslim. Anybody who says shahadatain, Muslim. This person is a Muslim, for sure. Does that mean we have iman? We're mu'mineen, according to Quran. Or is there a difference between Islam, saying the shahadatain, and iman, that lofty position with God? So, brothers and sisters, if you can turn to a verse of the Quran. This surah is surah number 49. So let's see if the sisters get it before the brothers. Surah 49 and verse number 14. Anybody who has it, let me know. Brothers, okay. Brothers won this time, inshallah. All right. So let's see if you can read along with me. Surah 49, let's read what God says in the Quran. قالت الأعراب. So the Arabs, the Bedouins, used to say this. آمنا. We believe. آمنا. What did God say for the Prophet to say in response to those who made declarations and said that we are mu'mineen? آمنا. God said this. قل لم تؤمنوا. You don't believe. It's possible for somebody to say the shahadatain and not be considered a mu'min according to Quran. Because God in the surah Anfal is going to define a mu'min according to Quran. He says, so instead of saying that you are mu'mineen, say this. Walakin qulu, say this, aslamna. We're Muslims. We've submitted. Walamma yadkhul al-iman fi qulubikum. But faith, iman, has not yet entered into your hearts. So there is a possibility of someone being a Muslim, but still that lofty rank of iman. Brothers and sisters, when I share these verses with you, you'll see what it is God grants the mu'mineen. That's just not any sort of person. Iman is going to be something that demands something from us. The actions of a mu'min will be different than the actions of a non-mu'min according to Quran. So, we're going to look now at the verses of the Quran. So the verses of the Quran, this is now, if you can follow along with me, so you still have Ali Imran, let's continue with our verses of the Quran. Now we're finding out who a mu'min is according to Quran. By the way, someone who's a mu'min, let me just, the end of the verse, so we'll speed forward. Surah 8, again, Surah Anfal, verse number 4. What are these mu'mineen like? What does God give them? Why is this so special? So let's speed forward a second and we'll go back to the definition of iman. Brothers and sisters, do you see? Same Surah 8, verse number 4. 4. Yes? All right. Over there you should see this. Ula'ika, the people who have these five traits. We're talking about must have traits for iman. The people who have these five traits, ula'ika, those people, humul mu'minuna haqqa. They are the real mu'mineen according to Quran. What do they get? Lahum darajatun inda rabbihim. These individuals have darajat. They have ranks inda rabbihim at their Lord. Wa maghfira. That divine maghfira and forgiveness that we talked about. These are the people who get it. Wa rizqun kareem. And that noble provision. They have paradise in this world and the next. So that's those mu'mineen. Now, back to our verse. Our verse, brothers and sisters, we're now defining what iman is according to Quran. God says this, وَعَطِيُوا اللَّهَ وَرَسُولَهُ and obey Allah and His Messenger in كُنْتُم مُؤْمِنِينَ. The first sign of faith, according to the Quran, and obey Allah and His Messenger in كُنْتُم, if you are مُؤْمِنِينَ, in كُنْتُم مُؤْمِنِينَ. So brothers and sisters, it's a very clear definition. God wants to see obedience. It doesn't matter what the responsibility is. That's not mentioned over here. What does God want? Obedience. Whoever is a mu'min obeys God. Right? Verse. وَعَطِيُوا اللَّهَ وَرَسُولَهُ. Obey Allah and His Messenger. إِن كُنْتُم مُؤْمِنِينَ. So brothers and sisters, as you see, this definition is very straightforward. It's not complicated. It's common sense. Imam Sadiq taught us about common sense before. Al-aqlu ma'ubida bihi ar-Rahman. Aql is that through which the Rahman, God, is worshipped. Waqtusiba bihi al-jinan. It leads us to paradise. Right? So it's very straightforward.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karimun Adim Alimun Halim Hakimun Mateen Ghafur Shakurun Wadud Qayyim وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has vowed no compromise on its demand for a full Israeli withdrawal from the Gaza Strip. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Iran's Press TV has covered this story and tells us more. The Gaza Strip-based Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has vowed not to back down from its demand for a complete withdrawal of all Israeli forces from Gaza, which has been enduring a genocidal Israeli war for the past 5 months. Abu Obeidah, a spokesman for the Azadin al-Qassam Brigade, Hamas's armed wing, made the remark in a televised statement on Friday, 8th of March. Abu Obeidah said, "Our top priority is to reach a prisoner exchange deal and a complete commitment for the halt of aggression and the enemy withdrawal, and there is no compromise on this point. Hamas also wants relief for our people, the return of the displaced, and reconstruction of Gaza." Abu Obeidah added that famine is stalking Gaza as a result of the war and a siege that the Israeli regime has been imposing on the territory. Israel launched its war against the Gaza Strip on 7th of October after the Al-Aqsa Storm, a surprise operation by Gaza's resistance groups against the occupied Palestinian territories that was staged in protest at intensification of Tel Aviv's decades-long crimes against Palestinians. The Israeli regime has so far killed more than 30,878 Gazans, most of them women, children and adolescents. Meanwhile, a spokesman for Iran's foreign ministry, Nasser Kanani, says the United States, Europe and international organizations have no intention of putting an end to Israel's crimes against Palestinians in Gaza. Nasser Kanani, in a post on his official X account on Saturday, 9th of March, said the criminal Israeli regime has been assured that it has a free hand to complete its ethnic cleansing project and genocide of the Palestinian people without having to be held accountable. Kanani added that a message from the High Representative of the European Union for Foreign Affairs, Josep Borrell, on X on Friday, marking International Women's Day, Borrell warned about the high casualty figures among civilian women and children in Gaza, saying 70% of the casualties are Palestinian women and children. Two mothers are killed every hour in Gaza. Josep Borrell has confirmed the mind-boggling figures, which are lost to no one around the world and everyone across the globe is witnessing every day, the Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani noted. Kanani emphasized that the United States and the European Union have held international and human rights organizations to ransom to advance their own unilateral and profiteering policies. He asked, "What is a clear example of crimes against humanity in the eyes of the European Union and the United States?" Kanani described unfolding crimes against humanity in Gaza as a historic embarrassment but are so-called advocates of human rights. Also, the Lebanese Islamic Resistance Movement Hezbollah says it has struck Israeli troops near Israel's border with southern Lebanon in response to the Israeli regime's ongoing genocide in Gaza. Lebanon's Arabic language Al-Mayadeen television network, citing a brief Hezbollah statement, reported that the group launched a heavy caliber Burkan or volcano missile at the Israeli al-Baghdadi military outpost on Saturday, 9th of March, and that the projectile precisely struck its designated target. The development came a day after the resistance fighters targeted a gathering of Israeli troops near al-Raheb military site with a barrage of artillery shells. Israeli forces stationed at al-Samarra as well as Ruwaisat al-Alam outpost in the occupied Kfar Chuba Hills also came under separate rocket attacks from southern Lebanon. Hezbollah fighters also used a surface-to-surface Falaq 1 missile to directly pound Israeli soldiers close to Jalal Alam military site. Turkey's TRT World has also covered the same story. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has said there will be no compromise on the Palestinian group's demand that the Israeli regime withdraws fully from the Gaza Strip. Our top priority is a prisoner exchange deal and a complete commitment for halting of aggression and a complete enemy withdrawal from Gaza. And there will be no compromise on this point, Abu Obeida, a spokesman for the Azadin al-Qassam Brigades, the military wing of the Hamas movement, said in a statement. The televised statement came as hopes dimmed for a new truce in the five-month-old Israeli war on Gaza. Mediators had been scrambling to lock in a truce before the Muslim holy month of Ramadan, which is set to begin as early as Sunday, 10th of March, depending on the lunar calendar. Also, an international effort is gathering pace to get desperately needed humanitarian relief into Gaza by sea. The dire conditions more than 5 months into Israel's devastating war have led some countries to airdrop food and other assistance over besieged Gaza. But a parachute malfunction turned the latest operation lethal. The European Commission Chief Ursula von der Leyen expressed hope a maritime corridor could open this Sunday, though crucial details of the planned operation remained unclear. The loss of lives in Gaza due to an aid airdrop malfunction shows an urgent need for a ceasefire in the besieged Palestinian enclave, the United Nations has emphasized. Responding to a question from Turkey's Anadolu News Agency on the airdrop incident, Stefan Dujarric, a spokesperson for the United Nations Secretary General, said, "We're extremely saddened by reports of people who have been killed during aid airdrops. This should be a reminder of why we need an immediate humanitarian ceasefire, why we need more access by road, and why we need better coordination with Israeli authorities and better deconfliction." Stefan Dujarric further stated, "The tragic accident is a symptom of the fact that we do not have an environment in which we can do large-scale predictable humanitarian delivery." The website Business Recorder has also covered the same story. The Palestinian resistance group's Hamas's armed wing said on Friday, 8th of March, there would be no compromise on the movement's demand for a full Israeli withdrawal from Gaza. "Our top priority to reach is a prisoner exchange deal But we also want a complete commitment for a halting of aggression in Gaza and a complete enemy withdrawal. And there will be no compromise on this point. Abu Obeida, a spokesman for the Ezzedine al-Qassam Brigades, the military wing of the Hamas movement, said in a televised statement. The statement came as hopes dimmed for a new truce in Israel's brutal five-month-old war on Gaza. On Thursday, 7th of March, Hamas's delegation voiced dissatisfaction with Israeli responses to its demands and left the latest round of talks in Cairo, Egypt, for consultations with the movement's leadership in Qatar. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has been demanding that Israel withdraws completely from the Gaza Strip, a demand which the Israeli regime has so far refused to do. You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,880 kHz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pastoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered by the Commander-in-Chief of Iran's Armed Forces, Imam Khamenei, on October 10, 2023, during the joint graduation ceremony for the cadets studying in the academies of the Islamic Republic of Iran's Armed Forces. In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful. All praise is due to God, Lord of the worlds, and peace and greetings be upon our Master, Muhammad, and his pure, immaculate progeny, particularly the remnant of God on earth. I would like to extend my greetings and congratulations to the dear youth who are treasured by the Iranian nation. Today is their graduation day. I would also like to congratulate the young people who are entering the nation's officer training universities and receiving their epaulets today. I would like to thank our dear brothers and respected commanders for the reports they presented. I would also like to thank you for the beautiful anthem that you sang. The first thing that I want to tell you, dear young people today, is that you have been instated into the armed forces and you have chosen this. This is one of the most vital jobs in the administration of the country and in the management of this dear land. This is a great honor for you.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Military jobs, whether in the various forces of the army, the various forces of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, or the country's law enforcement organization, are some of the occupations that rank at the top of the list of the country and nation's most important duties and responsibilities. You have accepted these responsibilities. You have gained this honor for yourselves and for your families by agreeing to work in the various parts of the armed forces. The armed forces are considered to be an iron shield for national security, an iron shield for national security, and national security is the foundation for all the other important areas that play a role in the country's progress. If there is no security, there is nothing else. If a country lacks the ability to protect its own security, it has no choice but to define itself under this power or that power. It has no choice but to attach itself to others. What does this mean? It means this country has to put its national honor on the line. If it fails to do this, if it fails to use its national honor, its political words will naturally have no credibility in the world.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.